Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 3rd, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. Thanks for having me today. We've got a smorgasbord of topics, so buckle your seatbelts, everybody. We're going to start off by talking about a legendary civil rights leader, John Lewis, and his legacy, both for civil rights and for environmental justice. And then we'll dive into the $60 million bribery scheme to bail out a nuclear energy plant, in Ohio. And then we'll jump into the importance of vigilance in politics. We should be keeping our eyes on all of our leaders to make sure that they are making decisions that favor the interests of their constituents and not the utilities.
So, Mariah, this week is an example of why it's great to be an American, because of the history and tradition and growth of our country. And I guess what I'm particularly thinking about is the legacy of Representative John Lewis, who passed away recently and has been buried with appropriate pomp and circumstances befitting what the guy did. And I just think it's worth a moment of recollection. The connection between, well, let me just begin by saying John Lewis was an iconic figure. I mean, you look just historically, right? This guy was in all the right places, right? He was at the march in 1963. He was like 23 years old speaking there. He was iconically involved in, as everyone you ever, and this is not news to anyone now, but I mean, he was crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge, which I hadn't realized was named after a Civil War general. They marched across it, were basically beaten when they got across it, and they were they had set up this circumstance of pushing for voting rights. I mean, the guy is American beyond telling. I guess one of the reasons that I think it's important to talk about is because not only are identically interwoven with what the work that John Lewis did, was I was surprised that he was environmentally conscious in a way that I would not have imagined. He in the 1990s was pushing for environmental justice reforms to protect communities of color that was eventually signed into an executive order by President Clinton. That's how far back John Lewis's commitment to environmental justice goes. And again, the moment we're in, this historical moment of 2020, like the scales have fallen from my eyes in many ways. I mean, you recognize the connection of these topics that have been hidden for so long, right? All these things fall away and say, yeah, these topics are all connected. And not only are the topics connected between racial justice, environmental justice, climate change, the enemies are similar, right? There's an article in The Guardian this week saying how fossil fuel companies are big funders of sort of police union organizations, right? And one more link of in this systemic thing. The environment. So all of the stuff that we've seen in the past few months is really important. And it just all comes to a head with the passing of this guy who was iconically involved in a lot of it. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. You know, he is really, he's truly a civil rights leader. And I think that part of his leader as a civil rights is that he saw the importance and connection between climate change, the need for climate action and environmental injustice, and how, you know, how those two things are so deeply related. And, you know, just to add one thing, you know, you mentioned that he got this this big ceremony and he received a lot of pomp and circumstance. I think it is important to note that I do not believe that the president attended, which I think for someone who's this iconic, it's disappointing that the president of our country did not come to that, to the funeral. So, or to the remembrances. So that's an aside, but, you know, just the point being, this is someone who, he's a civil rights stalwart, but not only that, he also is an environmental stalwart, and that's a, you know, it's an amazing record.
Yeah. It seems like it's almost the same thing. And I guess the other reason that the whole thing seems important to consider is that the work, the nonviolent direct action. So I guess many of the phrases that John Lewis is famous for, getting into good trouble and, you know, putting yourself in the way of things. I mean, all of those things apply to climate work as well, which, as we said, is intimately bound with racial justice, but there's lots of opportunities for, you know, straight up, we have people standing in the way of trains now. And it's fascinating how the whole issue of nonviolent direct action from Thoreau, right, who wrote about it in the 1840s because he didn't want to pay tax to support the Mexican War, to Mahatma Gandhi, who took the same ideas and applied them to liberation of India from the British Empire, to Martin Luther King, who took the same ideas and applied them to civil rights, along with John Lewis. I mean, they were intimately familiar with the philosophy, the moral understructure of these direct action things. And in a way, it's created this bedrock of philosophical approaches as to how everyone can resist in a nonviolent way. And I just think it's a remarkable tribute to John Lewis that, you know, there he is.
Yeah, I have a couple of great quotes from him. He, on his website, on his congressional website, he said, "Humanity is the most important endangered species under threat from climate change, and yet we flood our ecology with poisons and pollutions." Right? So that's a good, powerful statement that he had front and center on his website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he also made a great connection between that. He says, "The rest of the world has seen the economic and environmental benefit of clean energy, and they will leave us behind." D.R. Tucker, when he was on our show, was fond of saying, "Make America late again," right? Is some of what's going on here. We're not following the pathway towards economic prosperity because we're not working fast enough or hard enough on renewable energy.
So I think that it's just a moment to appreciate the life of of someone who is, I keep struggling for words, so American, right? His whole life story is so intertwined with the America that I would like to live in. It's just, it's great. So, God bless.
Rest in peace.
God bless John Lewis, and let us learn from his legacy. So there's that. There's something else that I wanted to touch briefly on, which is much more inside modern corrupt politics. And it's about the Speaker of the House in Ohio getting arrested. So, Mariah, you can fill in the story, but I think that the top-level sketch is that about a year ago, Ohio passed what was generally at the time called the worst energy legislation in the country. It basically squashed renewable energy in Ohio. It paid huge amounts of money to keep nuclear and coal plants alive. It was just considered this reprehensible bill. And like, what actually happened? What was the motivation to pass such a terrible bill? Well, it turns out this past, 10 days or so, it's come to light that the Justice Department, what's left of it, I guess, went in and arrested the Speaker of the Ohio House for taking what's said to be something like $60 million in bribes from the utilities to craft this energy plan. Right. Do you have any part of that story to sort of fill in the image? I mean, what have you read about it? Is it colossally damaging as it sounds like?
Yeah. Well, so you have Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder was arrested due to the $60 million bribery scheme. And, I don't have these details crystal clear, but essentially I think he had a 501c4 called Householders Generation Now. And that $60 million was getting funneled it was masked, but from some digging and tracing, it seems like that $60 million came from a nuclear power company called First Energy Solutions, which has since changed names. I don't know if I have that new name, but it's since changed names. It's Energy Harbor is the new name. So they were funneling this $60 million bit by bit, you know, over the years, with the idea that then when the House Speaker got into office, this Generation Now is helping him to get elected. And the idea was that when he got into office, he would pass a nuclear bailout law that would give back $1.3 billion to this company, Energy Harbor. Right, it was renamed Energy Harbor. And it passed, and it worked, and they got their, $1.3 billion. And again, everything was masked, so some digging had to be done. I think they were called Company A in some of the,
individual one called Company A. Almost independent of the specifics of the case, the idea that the fossil fuel industry or that these guys would be, the utilities would have so much power.
It's nuclear, right? I mean,
this is, particular thing is a nuclear, but I think it was also fossil fuel involved, but yeah, the big ticket was the nuclear, right? But still, it's the utilities, like even in Massachusetts, the utilities have a lot of power, right? And the idea that it's like this cautionary tale of how much power the utilities have, and they are in some sense the real enemy. Is that how do you make sense of it? Tell me. You see this huge.
Yeah, there's a big problem when you have corporate entities that can basically get their candidates, dump a bunch of money into a political campaign, get their candidate into office, and then pass legislation that works in favor of the corporation and not the people that elected that candidate. Right. That's a problem. That's a really big problem. There should be ways to protect us from that, because clearly this householder was not acting in the interest of the constituents, since what happened was this $1.3 billion was tacked onto to residents' power bills. So all of the residents ended up paying the money for this $1.3 billion bailout. That's not the best interest of the constituents at all.
No, you think?
On a number of levels, right? It's certainly not the best interest for them to be paying the bills for this First Energy Solutions company, but it's also not in their best interest to be paying the bills for nuclear energy, when there's other renewable energy solutions. I mean, I guess that's a whole different nuanced thing. I think I could make a stronger argument for if it was a fossil fuel company. I think nuclear is a whole different ballgame.
I think the utilities, though, even here in Massachusetts, have an enormous amount of power over the whole government, the whole state of Massachusetts government, right? I mean, think that the utilities here in Massachusetts, I mean, there's not big nuclear power plants, but they want to build pipelines. The utilities make money. The way they make money is by getting a return via the rate payers. They get some like 14% on any investments they make in infrastructure like pipelines. And so they have this vested interest in making pipelines, building this hardware. They have the money to put into the state legislature to get the attention they deserve. And it goes all the way. I mean, there's an argument. Now we talk, switch over to Governor Baker. There is clearly the Weymouth compressor an ongoing sort of environmental justice offense in Weymouth is still being built. The governor seems to have no interest in it. He refers to the locals. He talks about how Weymouth is not exactly virgin territory. I mean, there's lots of...
Yeah, there's also the same, the Baker administration in Brockton, the Baker administration approved a gas power plant that if constructed will negatively impact residents of color and low-income families. That's another contentious issue that we see happening under his administration. He's propping up some biomass in Springfield, which is not, we know that that's not great for the environment. A lot of soot, I think, involved with burning biomass. I think there was one other thing that the Chelsea Creek in East Boston, the proposal for an electrical substation on flood prone land next to 8 million gallons of jet fuel, which is also adjacent to a very popular playground. So yeah, let's put a substation next to a bunch of jet fuel and then put a bunch of kids next to it.
Right. And I guess, particular reason to think that anything illegal to the scale of a $60 million bribery scheme is going on in the state of Massachusetts. So I do know that Charlie Baker, I believe in the last State of the State address, committed the state to reaching a net zero by 2050 goal, which is to his credit. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that it's Baker's done a lot of great things for the environment, and I think at base value he's a very outspoken Republican in a political climate where it is tough to be a climate change advocate as a Republican.
But there clearly is huge political leverage that the utilities and these big companies have, and they can. I mean, the governor is perhaps the most clear-cut case of it, but I think it happens a lot in a lot of places, and it's one of these places we have to identify the enemy, and the enemy is in some sense the utility because they have the vested interest in keeping things the way they are. See, here's a couple of the black helicopters now going to land on my head and take me away. If you never see me again, Mariah, please check in the national in the Massachusetts State Penitentiary System. They'll have me under, John Doe. Oh no, they're going away. Sorry about that. anyway, there's pluses and minuses. It's not the man is certainly no longer a denier, right? I guess the question comes is whether or not how subject he feels to the influences of utilities. And I hope that he is, resisting those. And, you got to give the guy, credit for what he's doing.
And I think that the notable thing here is not to disparage Baker, but to say, to remind ourselves of the importance of vigilance and to the importance of keeping our eyes on our political leaders and holding them to their, holding their feet to the fire and saying, look, we care about this issue. You need to care about this issue too, because we are your constituents and, we're holding you to that. So making sure that we're really active and vocal and...
We should be careful and recognize what the power structures are that are giving us the energy that we're getting. Right? Full stop. Oh, I'm glad I escaped that helicopter. Anyway, Mariah, we should put it down there. Well, let me say the following thing. We will put up links to... the things that we talked about on the pod. The pod will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want, you can send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. If you want, you can tell your friends to listen to this show on their favorite podcast distribution app, which whatever that is, because we're on all of them. You search for Climate Minute and associated with Massachusetts Climate Action Network. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability. We accept responsibility for building a durable future. And we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that thing, we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.